welcome. Thank you for joining us here on the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio Presents. And tonight, we're going to take a look at a different special. I know you're used to tuning in and having Holzer's Ghosts. We'll be back with that next week. And we have got a huge show next week. We're going to do a case that we've never been able to cover on the Holzer Files. We're going to be taking a look at Holzer's Ghosts, Amityville. I have three very special guests joining me next week, including a gentleman who has had access inside the Amityville home in 2017 to investigate. He's going to tell us what that was like and what was going on. Are there still specters haunting Amityville? We'll find out about that next week. Make sure that you tune in and check it out. Same bat time, same bat channel right here. You'll be able to check us out every week on Thursday nights. Tonight, though, I wanted to take you on a slightly different journey, but with a familiar face, somebody that you all know and love will be joining us in just a few moments. There is a brand new documentary that has landed. They call them the Shock Docs, and it is on the Discovery Plus network. You'll see running along the bottom of the screen, Ed Gein, The Real Psycho, only on Discovery Plus. You're going to want to check this out. It is historical in many different ways. For those of you unfamiliar with Ed Gein, Ed Gein's horrific murder spree and just the nature of the crimes that he perpetrated helped to spawn some of Hollywood's most iconic characters. As a matter of fact, I think American Horror Story Season 2 features a character based on Ed Gein. One of the most famous, of course, from the Bates Motel, Norman Bates, also based on the character Ed Gein, the real life person. Robert Block saw the news that broke in November of 1957 and was blown away. Watching this story unfold in the newspaper inspired him. And as the headlines reached around the world to this horrific crime, he put pen to paper and created one of the most iconic books and one of the most terrifying movies, of course, with the help of legendary director, writer, Alfred Hitchcock. He also inspired a villain from one of our favorite more modern movies, Silence of the Lambs. Buffalo Bill also is inspired by Ed Gein, Leatherface, and the list goes on. But those are among some of the most famous. And if you don't believe me, there are quite a few more. So you can certainly go check them out for yourself. Just Google movies based on Ed Gein, and you will be astounded how many times they've dipped into that well. Well, for the first time in history, a paranormal team was allowed on the property, which has not been open to the public since 1957, 1958, when it burned to the ground. Because of the horrific nature of the crimes, a mysterious fire broke out at the Ed Gein farm in March of 1958, reducing it to rubble. So there hasn't been much to explore or investigate, but that area is known to be haunted, strange things happening. And when I heard who was going to be a part of this, I was very excited and glad that they would be at the reins of this. I will admit wholeheartedly, I was very jealous because this is a case I would have loved to have had a chance to investigate. But if anybody else in the world had to do it, I'm glad it was these two ladies and gentlemen from the Holzer Files, Portals to Hell, the Ghost Brothers, Fright Club, you name it. She's been on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, Cindy Kaza.
What's up, everyone?
Hey, Cindy, thanks a lot for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to talk about this case, and this was an amazing investigation, and I've got to dig deep into how this affected you, and did it continue to affect you after you got done? Joining us as well on tonight's program, paranormal investigator, researcher, and lead investigator of this special, Steve Shippey. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Good to have you back again, buddy. I know that we had you on Darkness Radio when your TV series launched over on Travel Channel. And now people can find that over at Discovery Plus as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So run past them the name of the show so they can make sure to go check it out.
It's called Haunting in the Heartland.
Haunting in the Heartland. Steve Shippey, the investigator. He also has other investigations that he's done. We've got links that I'll be sharing throughout tonight's show for ways to follow with these guests and follow their careers, their investigations, and more. Guys, I can't tell you, I loved the movie Psycho. I had no clue, of course, growing up that this movie was based on a real story. I loved this movie so much. My mom and I would watch it. And one of my favorite all-time memories, and Cindy, I think you'll get a kick out of this, right? With my mom, I'm at home. I'm a teenager. The phone rings and I go pick it up. And this is when phones used to be attached to walls. We didn't just have them in our hands. They were attached to walls with long cords. And I picked up the phone and it was a telemarketer from some carpet cleaning company. And they're like, yes, hi, this is ABC Carpet Cleaning. And we wanted to talk to you. Do you need your carpets cleaned? And I paused for a second and I looked over and I go, I'll have to ask mother. Hold on, please. And then I pulled the phone away and I go, mother, it's a phone call. Oh, God, mother, blood, mother, what have you done? And then I went back to the phone. I go, yes, we're going to need your services. And they click it and hang up. That was one of, and my mom was in tears laughing through this entire thing. I absolutely enjoyed it. She loved watching these movies with me. But I remember when I was about 16, she had the book that detailed the account of Ed Gein. And I picked it up and started reading it. I don't think I put that book down. It was so intriguing and terrifying. I got to know, guys, and I don't know which one of you can answer this one first, so I'll just kind of throw it in the air. How did you get access to the Ed Gein farm in Plainfield, Wisconsin?
It was a pretty long, painstaking process. The gentleman that owns it had a lot of clever ways of kind of disguising exactly who he was. So we had to kind of go through a lot of channels, different companies until we were able to finally get a name. And even then, you know, it was pretty clear he'd been probably contacted numerous times and didn't really want to give anybody access. So we had to really explain, you know, who we were, what our intentions were. He made it clear the things that could and could not happen. And after several weeks, we finally gained his trust and really abided by, you know, those rules.
When you hear that this guy's willing to open the doors and give you this opportunity to investigate this property, did you ask him why purchase that property and kind of keep it open and almost in the pristine state it was left in 1958?
The interesting thing is that we had a lot of questions for him and none of them would really be answered. I mean, he would just skip right past it. So, you know, if I were to ask him a specific question like that or in the vein of that, he would just immediately take it from there to, okay, so how long are you guys going to want to be there? You know, it was more just, he wasn't going to tell us any of that. So we don't know if he bought it because it was Gein's property. Couldn't really get a read on him, to be honest with you, at all.
Well, Cindy, working with you on Holzer Files and watching on other programs, you went the full Monty on this documentary. You did automatic writing. You did remote viewing. You did psychometry. And to start this special off with you guys arriving at the location, again, keeping you blind for why you're there and what you're there to experience, you start to psychometrize the area itself. Were you feeling, even just outside those gates, were you feeling any kind of sense coming from that property?
Well, before I even went to the location, I don't know where I stopped and got this. At some store, there was a Blessed Mother necklace, and I'm not even a practicing Catholic. I come from a Catholic family, but I was like, gosh, I really think I need to buy this and then put it on. So I wore that necklace to the farm, and I even said that. I said, typically, I don't do this, but I felt compelled to do it. It's like, maybe it was my dead grandmother trying to help me out. Who knows, right? But I knew that we were definitely walking into something really, really dark. And everybody, you know, knows Ed Gein. I didn't know all of the details, but I mean, even so, I knew I was getting myself into something that I probably, I wouldn't say I normally wouldn't do it. I normally don't have exposure to that sort of a case. I guess that's better put. It's such a rare case, right? What went on that land and the things that he did. I mean, it's one of a kind.
I've had people question, especially your work on Holzer Files and now with this. People had asked the same question to me when they realized we were going to do the show this evening. And they said, how does Cindy know she's picking up the energy and the story of the property, and she's not picking up the energy from you or Steve Shippey, who are aware of the story?
No.
How do you discern between where you're getting your information from, or does it not matter? It's just the fact that you're picking it up.
Yeah. So, okay. So here's the thing, like psychic mediums, or when I teach mediumship, people like to break things down. That's psychic. That's mediumship. That's this, that's that. Right. Okay. So I generally know when I'm feeling a psychic imprint, it feels different. When I'm going to the spirit world, the vibration of that feels different than when I'm picking up on a memory or an imprint. But if you really think about it, at the end of the day, does it really even matter so long as you're getting information to help the case? But it does matter when you're dealing with an active, intelligent spirit. Because a memory, while it can harm you, I guess, psychologically, an intelligent spirit that's aggressive can harm you in the moment. But there's an energetic feeling that's associated with the different layers or levels or whatever on the other side. And over time, when you work in this field, you know, more often and you have more exposure to different kinds of cases and different spirits, you learn to differentiate. But what's tricky about a case like this is when you're walking into something that's really dark like that, you can be fooled into thinking you're dealing with something different than what you're actually dealing with. So I've had experiences where I felt that I was dealing with a spirit that, oh, it's not too bad, when it actually was a lot worse than it than what I felt initially. So you always run the risk as a psychic medium when you open yourself up, you know, to that degree, especially with automatic writing. And I just want to say this. I don't know that people really understand how much more open I feel when I'm doing automatic writing than when I'm doing, excuse me, clairvoyant mediumship or clairaudient mediumship, because I'm literally allowing the spirit to channel through me onto the paper, and you're really exposed and vulnerable in those moments.
Steve, as an investigator, we've gotten called into many different locations around the world that have these strange claims. Very few have such a dark history. And for listeners that are still not up to par, when Ed Gein was arrested in November 1957 after a prominent townsperson, Bernice Warden, went missing from her hardware store, they found her decapitated, hanging upside down and gutted, for lack of a better term. Then they discovered the House of Horrors. He had murdered two people for certain and had desecrated up to 9 bodies that he had dug up out of the ground, and had created everything from a belt made of the breasts of the women with the nipples surrounding the belt to upholstering chairs in human flesh, lampshades. He would take the skulls and turn them into bowls that he would eat chowder and chili from. This guy was, to say disturbed seems like it's still too dismissive, not nearly getting into the true vibe of this. But when you and I go into a case like this and there's this dark thread, how do you keep in check your expectations from the real experience of being there? You know, I mean, when you know you're going to go see a scary movie, you're kind of jumping and twitching throughout the entire thing, waiting for something to jump out at you, right? I've found that I've had that feeling with Cindy when we've been on location for Holzer Files, and I try to center. But how do you go about, especially with something with this type of gravitas, how do you repose yourself and just allow the moment to happen as opposed to your mind leading you down any of these paths?
It's definitely an excellent question, a perfect way to ask that. I mean, for me, it's kind of like that, more of a journalistic lens, you know, being a documentarian. You know, of course, like you said, you have those expectations. You're going into that case thinking about everything that you know, the gravity of it, you know, how infamous the case was. But you don't really know what kind of activity you're going to get, if any at all. You just never know. So basically, I just try to have that journalistic lens, kind of seeing it, that separation through the camera. And that's kind of more of my mind frame.
Well, I've got a guess. I know, Cindy, you picked up on, you believe that there were other bodies there, perhaps under mounds. And if I, you know, I live in Minnesota, Wisconsin is our neighbor. We have mounds here. I know there are mounds throughout Wisconsin where Native Americans were buried, and those areas cannot be disturbed. Can you explain to the listeners, how do you sift through all the information of the land, especially when you're doing psychometry on it? I've got to guess you're picking up on the Native American and indigenous peoples aspect, and then the crimes and Augusta Gein and Ed Gein and the people. How do you separate that and focus to one directive?
Right. So, I mean, Is there going to be an extended cut, Shippy? I mean, hey, watch the extended cut. That's where I'll leave it, because there were things that didn't make it into the final cut. I'll leave it at that. I really don't know how much I'm supposed to disclose. But there were things that were picked up on that weren't, you know, just didn't make it into the final cut. So I will say I was able to distinguish between some of those things. But what happens is, you know, when I'm psychometrizing the land, depending on how the information is coming in, I have to really.
Oh, the spirits are at play. Cindy Case is frozen. There you go. We lost you for a second.
Wait, am I back? Sorry.
Yes, you're here.
So, okay. So the way I describe mediumship is it's like playing Pictionary charades and telephone for real, because sometimes I see imagery, I feel, I hear, sometimes I know. If I'm seeing an image of something, right? For example, let's say I'm seeing a mound, right? Now, if I feel into that mound, what is in that mound? What am I feeling? How does that tie into the case? And sometimes there's just more to the story than I'm supposed to tell. I think I just want to leave it because I don't know how much I can tell. I'm trying to be discreet here.
You don't have to tell me about the specifics. And I understand for people that don't know, listen, doing the Holzer Files, every episode could be about ancient Indian burial grounds because
Native American land. Right.
That was it. So we know that. And sometimes we legitimately have to sidestep that because there are other aspects of the haunting that we're trying to focus on. So is it ever hard when you're discerning there's bodies under mound? Are they showing themselves to you? Are you hearing that it's tied to Gein, or are you just picking up on that sensation?
Well, no, in that moment, I just knew. So I was seeing, I knew there was a mound, I was hearing, I was feeling. But here's the thing, regardless of the mounds and all that stuff, well, no, with the mounds, not even regardless of, I do believe Ed Gein had more victims than what they discovered. And I do believe that there are more body parts or bodies on that land. That I stand firm in my belief there. And then there's another aspect that hopefully is in the extended cut. Yeah.
Steve, there's so many different... versions of this story. I remember hearing that, you know, that Ed would make meat and sausage and he would give them to neighbors saying it was venison. Do we know, is there any truth to that rumor? Was there ever any of that we were able to discern as real or not?
You know, after we went through all the reports and everything, we couldn't find anything like that, but it did come up often where they would ask Ed, you know, kind of during the interrogations and even after the fact, when he was in the institution, were you eating these corpses? Were you committing cannibalism? Did you provide, you know, meat from human beings to other people? And he would either deny it or just not answer it, depending on the day.
Wow. That's pretty telling in itself. Yeah. Now, I understand as well that what's kind of frustrating to law enforcement at that time was that he had kind of not played his cards very close to the vest. He was kind of loosey-goosey and friends with kids in the neighborhood and such. And there was a report that some of the kids actually got in or had seen inside his home and saw the skull bowls. And they brought it up to people and they thought it was maybe just Halloween decorations or things, right?
Yeah, we saw the same things in the report, that there were some people that actually saw these things and he just kind of dismissed them away and nobody really thought much of it, which is kind of amazing that it didn't go to the authorities at some point, you know?
Well, and this guy, albeit odd, and it's really easy after the fact to say, oh, he was a strange guy. But when they arrested Ed, he was at a neighbor's house having dinner. So he was friendly and accepted. He did a lot of handyman work and was just kind of the town oddball, but he was still kind of embraced by the community. Is that a fair way to state that?
Yeah. In fact, we did see, I did read in some of the reports that he would actually babysit for some of the locals. That's how trusted this individual was.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Jeez. Now, you guys had a chance to investigate multiple locations throughout this. You of course, visited the farmstead where the house burned to the ground. You visited the former site of the jail where Ed Gein was held. You visited Warden's hardware store. And you seem to be picking up elements everywhere. Now, Cindy, as a medium and a psychic, Is Ed following you two, giving you breadcrumbs, or are fragments of this man's personality left there because of the heinous acts that he did in each location and his own psychological effects at the jail? What can you tell us about that?
Well, it's kind of all of the above. Like, here's the deal, right? When you die, it's not as if you can only be stuck in one location. So there's a great book called Dying to Be Me, written by this woman, Anita Morjani. I'm just going to give you a little bit of a background because I think it'll help me explain this. Anita Morjani had a near-death experience. She obviously came back to write this book. And what she talks about during that experience is being able to be at five different places simultaneously. Then she comes back to accurately describe what each person in her family was doing during those moments. They were nowhere near one another, and also able to talk about what the doctors were doing during that time. So I really believe that the presence of a spirit can be in multiple places simultaneously. So for example, when we're at the hardware store and I'm tapping into Ed Gein, well, Ed Gein can be there and also be at the farm at the same exact time. I'll also be at the cemetery, right? Like we try very hard as human beings in this dimension to explain the possibilities on the other side, but I really don't think we have the words to do so. And I don't think we can fully comprehend it. It's ineffable, right? Like we can't fully comprehend it. So I think that there's that part of it. And then there's also the psychic imprinting left behind at a location where murder happened. So that can create its own force and its own energy. And as a psychic medium, I can be affected by all of those different aspects of a haunting. And sometimes when people walk into a location and they don't understand how to differentiate between psychic imprinting and paranormal activity or I guess feeling a spirit, they might think that the psychic imprinting is actually a spirit when it's not. See where I'm going?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
This case was so unusual for many different reasons. And Steve, I'm curious, you go there expecting maybe to come upon Ed Gein or his victims. Were you surprised to come across Augusta Gein still there?
Yeah, I was definitely very surprised. And Cindy picked up on that, I mean, almost immediately. I mean, from the minute we got on the land, you know, from the research, we knew that she was a big part of the story. Well, a big part of Ed's story, you know, kind of what kind of created that monster, one of the main components. But I didn't really ever even consider that Augusta would be part of the equation as far as the haunting.
When Cindy, you start picking up on Mother, and I mean, it was a psycho moment, right? You're like, Mother, and she's right here, and you're picking right up. I'm curious, because he was creating, again, for people that don't know the story, Ed Gein was skinning women and creating a meat suit, a female suit that he could wear to try to become his mother. Were you wondering if he was this really Ed Gein's mother, or was it the transfiguration of his connecting in this meat suit as though he was Augusta?
No, it was Augusta. That I'm okay. Sure of. That I'm 100% sure that she was definitely there. And honestly, I feel it's important that she was there, because it helped explain a lot about why Ed Gein was the man that he was, right? I mean, it her presence was so strong, it was overbearing, even in the afterlife.
Was it pretty well mapped out, Steve? And for those of you watching along, you can visit Steve Shippey at patreon.com/Steve Shippey and see some of the other programs and investigations he's done. But Steve, as you're going through the history, the case files, looking at this, does Gein talk about the abuse, or is he protective of Mother?
You know, he remains protective of her pretty much at all costs. I mean, even when they were kind of trying to, you know, dig pretty deep into his psyche and asking really direct questions about her, he never, I guess you could say, threw her under the bus for the abuse. It kind of came about in roundabout ways where the psychiatrists and psychologists would kind of assess these things.
And in connecting with Gein at each one of these locations, do you feel he is in some way, and I'll start with you, Steve, and then we'll slip over to Cindy for this. Do you feel he was in some way trying to give you insight into who he was and why he did these things? Or do you think that he's just proud of it still? And this is the after effect of what he did and he's okay with it.
You know, I feel like there was a little bit of both, you know, happening throughout the investigation, but I do feel like, you know, toward the end of the investigation, it seemed like some of the layers were kind of peeling back and some of the responses we were getting through the geoport or other devices. And especially I feel like what Cindy was gathering was more what happened to him and the fact that his mother would always speak for him and that he didn't really have much of an identity. That's when it kind of changed.
Mm-hmm. And Cindy, as you're looking back at this and he's popping up, what sense are you getting from him? Are there different elements at each location, like clarity at one, more chaotic and insane at another, zoned out at the jail? What could you tell from each iteration you would bump into?
They're all different. It was kind of like, you know, a trail of breadcrumbs a little bit. I mean, they were all just very different. So I can't say. It's kind of a hard question. I'm trying to, like, I have to, like, dig deep in that one, right? Like, I have to, like, go in, like, how would I explain that? It was just very, very different. But you also have to take into account, depending on the location and what happened at that particular location, I feel like the energy can be ramped up at the locations where more tragedy happens, because that has its own energetic imprint left behind. So that can fuel the fire. Dave, we can't hear you. Can you hear Dave? Oh,
there we are. We okay now?
There, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fun times on StreamYard. You have not only Cindy there to help you, but you've got a pretty wide array of different equipment. The SLS camera, which is mapping in something, joining you at different aspects of this investigation. The tool that blew me away on this was the geoport. For listeners and viewers that are not familiar with this tool, Steve, can you explain to us a little bit about how the geoport works?
Sure. Yeah, the geoport is it's mainly an ITC communication device, very similar to a spirit box, if you will, but with a few different enhancements. And a gentleman named George Brown is the creator of it. And to my knowledge, I think that's the only way you can actually acquire one. Very seldomly, you'll see one pop up on eBay. Typically, people that have one hold on to them. But he is available if you search him out and talk to him a little bit, build a rapport. I think if he likes you and likes what you're doing, he'll build one for you.
Now, the geoport, is it a device like an Ovilus that has a bank of words plugged into it?
No. It basically, you connect a radio component to it and it kind of sweeps, through the different channels, much like a spirit box.
Now, what was enthralling to me about the use of the geoport was you weren't getting a bunch of, it's 7 o'clock, WLS, but you weren't getting those clips, right? It was direct responses to questions you were asking. And it was when you call out for it to name you and Cindy and
that
the
was
responses.
Freaky, man.
Yeah, that blew me away. One of the things that I think about a lot is there was a part in the investigation where Cindy just flat out tells me, turn that thing on, turn it on right now. And I just reach over and turn it on. As soon as I get the volume up, the first thing it says is Augusta, and that blew me away because she was sensing Augusta and just, out of nowhere tells me, turn that thing on. And I did. And then boom, Augusta comes right out of it.
Right. So, and just for listeners to understand, if it's hooked into a radio, the chance in November in Wisconsin for the word Augusta to come out and Ed,
right?
Or Edward, and wear the suit, and those specific pieces of information, that is insane. The probability, I don't think Stephen Hawking on a lazy day with nothing else to do could come up with the equation of what are the odds of those answers coming through that machine. You looked gobsmacked by it, Steve. I mean, I've seen you react before on your shows and you certainly get into it, but that seemed to even stun you.
It definitely did. I mean, you know, we've had really good results using the GeoPort and other ITC communication, but kind of like you're saying, Dave, I mean, a lot of the times, you know, you have to really listen in because you're hearing, you know, just little blips from the radio. And, you know, sometimes you think you hear something, but it kind of sounds like a, you know, a DJ in a radio station or a blip from a commercial. But these were very specific answers. And we weren't getting a lot of that radio chatter, which I thought was kind of interesting too. And another thing, just to kind of note, that we would have a lot of malfunctioning with our devices, particularly the spirit box. Every time we would turn it on, it would start to sweep in the opposite directions, go back and forth, and then just kind of wind down and the batteries would die. So a lot of our gear we couldn't even use because it just would malfunction.
Very bizarre. We're going to have to take a break. But Cindy, I got to tell you, knowing how powerful you are at this, my wife and I just purchased a new home. And she asked me if I showed you a picture, if you could psychometrize it. Just looking at this house, does it look like I might be in trouble owning this? It's a picture from the Universal Studios backlot. It's the psycho Norman Bates house. My wife and I got a chance to visit there during
sleep
the film.
Tight, Dave.
Yeah, exactly. Mother's in the window watching. We do have to take a break. We're going to come back. Watch Ed Gein, The Real Psycho, only on Discovery Plus. We're covering parts of the story tonight, but you legitimately have to watch this. I would say, honestly, not just because one of my dearest friends is a part of the show, but because Cindy is too. I'm kidding. But it is one of the best paranormal documentaries I've had a chance to see. And the evidence is off the charts. Amazing. So check out Ed Gein, The Real Psycho, only on Discovery Plus. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the program. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Tonight, we're talking about Ed Gein, The Real Psycho, the brand new shock doc that's available only on Discovery Plus. Before we go too far, hey kids, just a few of my packages still remain if you're interested. The Other Side, the book I co-wrote with Marley Gibson and Patrick Burns on ghost hunting and the investigation, is available. You also get a Darkness Radio car decal so that you can show your bling. Also, a Holzer Files autographed card from me, although I've signed it as Shane Pittman. It's just the way I like to work. But if you're interested, I've got the entire kit available. $20 will get you all three of those items, plus I think $5 shipping and handling. If you're interested, just email me, dave@darknessradio.com, and say you'd like to get a hold of my package. I will forward that on to my wife, and she will send you the invoice. We'll get you squared away. They have been selling like hotcakes. Thank you so much. And speaking of which, we have been raising money for Special Olympics with the Polar Plunge. And it's not too late. It does end this weekend. We are now over $6,200 for the Polar Plunge and Special Olympics. I'm very proud of this. The listeners of Darkness Radio stepped up big. Our friend Chris Jericho from AEW donated $1,000. I auctioned off two haunted dolls that I used on the Queen Mary episode. And the total for both of those came a little bit over $1,100 for those two haunted dolls. So I want to thank everybody for being a part of that. $6,200. If you are interested in donating, just email me, dave@darknessradio.com. $1, $5, $10, $1,000, whatever you can afford, I will send you the link. Go make that donation before this weekend so that way we can send the money over to Special Olympics. It goes a long way to help these Special Olympians with their training, their uniforms, travel expenses, and more. So again, thank you to all the big-hearted people around the world that have helped us out with that. It means more than you could possibly know. We will be back next Thursday with Darkness Radio Presents Holzer's Ghosts. We'll be examining a case that we couldn't do on the TV show. We're going to be going to Amityville, and we've got some really interesting people that will be joining us on that program. You'll find out a little bit more about them next week, so make sure you tune in and check it out. We'll also find out what it's like to have been in the house recently. Is a haunting still going on? Tune in next week to find out. All right, we're talking about Ed Gein, The Real Psycho, only on Discovery Plus. You can find it now. If you are still on the fence, go try the 7-day free trial. Watch it, binge watch the Holzer Files, binge watch Haunting in the Heartland, Steve Shippey's show, and make sure you check out Ed Gein, The Real Psycho. You guys are going to love it. You'll see why the value is there. But try the free 7-day trial first. And if you're not completely satisfied, Steve Shippey will send you a tooth from the ground.
It's like an infomercial. I feel like I'm on an infomercial right now. If you're not completely satisfied.
And that's not all. If you order today, but honestly, just go check it out and try it out for yourself. Guys, I'm not kidding you. This is one of the best paranormal documentaries I've had a chance to see. Now, let's talk about Tom Dreyer. This part of the story, I don't want to get into too deeply because I want there to still be some elements of holy shit when people watch this special. But Tom Dreyer had purchased a few items in auction. I won't tell you what those items were, but you went there, Cindy, you psychometrized a table that was covered with two blankets so you could not see what was there.
Right.
And you picked up immediately on the things that were underneath that blanket.
I want to lead one piece in. Can I interrupt you? Can I say thing?
Stiffy. Wait,
Stiffy. Shippy. I think I
can. Good old Sheave Stippy.
No, I think I can tell this part leading into this, right? So we're going to, you know, his house, and I don't know what's under those blankets. I have no idea. But the night before that, which this part didn't make it into the cut, but I think it's okay that I share this. I was seeing deer head all around me. I'm like, God, I keep seeing all these deer heads like staring at me. What is this? So we get to his house and he literally has like 6 or 7 deer heads around the house. And I was like, that's wild. Like, this is so weird. So we walked in there and I was like, oh, I know we're walking into something really, like, really messed up. Yeah.
So when you start tuning into what's there and then Tom drops the bombshells on you, Steve, I know working with Cindy, I feel like an overprotective dad because I don't want something dark attaching to her. I don't want something overwhelming her. And then to hear the effects of owning these objects and now Cindy's touching and kind of pulling in that energy, what's going through your mind at that time?
You know, well, Cindy and I definitely had some different, you know, conversations out there about being super careful. And I know, you know, she's super aware of all the ramifications, I guess you could say, but also let me know that she's very protected in her own way. And so, you know, listening to Tom Dreyer's statements and even really just the sense in the house, I mean, it felt very ominous there, you know, and we definitely did urge him, you know, off camera, I guess you could say, when we were, you know, done with the investigation to really consider getting rid of those items, not to another individual, but perhaps just, you know, maybe eliminating them in one way or another.
Throwing him into a volcano, maybe that would be a good plan.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, you know, anytime that Cindy and I felt things were getting a little too deep, you know, we would immediately say, okay, well, we've done enough here. We've established what we needed to establish and let's just, you know, leave it be for now.
Cindy, when you are in contact with something, and that part of the story is very dark, it is insanely dark and heartbreaking. Do you go back that night? Are you just contained with that ick that from where you've been and knowing the darkness that surrounds those items?
Honestly, I was actually more sad for him because he lost so many people. I mean, his wife died, his parents died, his animals died. I mean, you know, that's sad. The amount of grief present in the house was palpable. So, okay, we have the haunting and we have these items and we have that scary part, which is never fun to see the imagery attached to the knives and all that stuff. But also the sadness that was present. I felt really bad for him, honestly.
Steve, do you take away a residual effect from visiting a location like that where there's that much sadness, darkness, and death surrounding it? I mean, not being necessarily a psychic medium, paranormal investigators, when we're steeped in this so often, we start to become more sensitive to this. How do you clear yourself and not have it affect you once you leave?
Well, I mean, it can definitely be difficult. In this case with Tom Dreyer, I mean, you could really see, you know, the effect that this was having on him, you know, just even on his face, you could see it, especially when he's telling these stories. But, you know, I try to focus on what's the end goal. You know, are we doing good with this investigation? Are we helping out in some type of way. And I just kind of look at it as, you know, even though you're absorbing, you know, as you're saying, you're kind of absorbing all this, experiencing it, hearing about it through conducting all the interviews. Sometimes, you know, sadly, even the communication with the spirit can make you really sad when you're hearing what happened to them or feeling that energy. But I feel like keeping your eye on the fact that you are doing something good, you are helping either the spirit that's haunting the location or the family or trying to bring a resolve. I try to focus on that part of it as much as I can.
Debbie pops in and says, poor Cindy, I was horrified. I can't even imagine what it was like for you. How long did it take you to decompress after being at each location that was so active?
I think I'm still decompressing a little bit. I mean, I have to say, like, it was one case that I think followed me or has followed me more than any other case that I've ever done, if I'm honest, because it's not so much that I feel the spirit energy from the case attached to me. It's more the psychological or mental imprinting left behind from allowing myself to open up to the imagery. Because you can't unsee something once you've seen it.
Right.
You can't exactly unsee it.
Lena says, I like that you both had common sense about the situation. Rick Perry asks, did someone get a big black cauldron from the house? That is Zach Beggins. It's on display at his haunted museum. It was actually, I think, used as an outside potter for a long time. Somebody had potted plants in it, but it was from the estate sale. And they had found body parts and things discarded in this cauldron. So it is on display there. Afterwards, Cindy Brown says, how do you cleanse yourself after investigating a location with such a high level of negative energy?
First of all, hi, Cindy. I know Cindy. She's taken some of my classes. So thank you for the question. I am a big Epsom salt person. So I take baths in lots of Epsom salt. I do use Palo Santo or sage sometimes, but I'm also, you know, respectful of the culture attached to using those two. So I'll say prayers when I use them. And also just trying to, clear my mind and my energy. So doing visualizations, getting grounded, actually, that's a big one. So anybody that's out there, that's a psychic medium, would know the importance of being grounded, because when we work, we're like open in our crown chakras. We're just wide open. And if you can't bring that back to center, it's really hard to recover from a crazy case.
Do you also soak in a nice Epsom salt bath, Steve, or what do you do to help clear yourself after something so dark and detailed?
I guess like you could say I kind of have my own methods. I like to spend a lot of time outdoors after a negative case, be out in the sun a lot, surround myself with positive people. And I also know a couple of people that I go to on occasion when I feel like it's necessary, you know, for different things.
Cindy Casper has a great question. So why keep the knife? You know, when you know that you're not certain that this wave of negativity that's hit your life is there, why keep it? Do these possessed possessions begin to possess the possessors of them? Cindy, boy, that was a lot of P's. But can these instruments start to influence the people that own them?
Well, it's funny that there's more Cindy's on this call than I've ever seen. There's right anyway, but look, there's. I think each case is different. You know, I do think that people, and as we've seen in episodes of Holster Files, become very attached to locations, to items. It's as if they, in a sense, can't live without them. They become obsessed with them. I do think that there's an aspect of that going on with Tom, because it doesn't make sense. Why else would you keep an item that brought so much, you know, pain into your life, if in fact the item brought that pain in, right? So it's like, I don't know. Everybody's different. But what I gather from my experience is there is an attachment there. There's an attachment to the item and what that item represents. There's something going on there for sure.
Chuck Casey says, this was amazing. Super fan, amazed at how dead on Cindy is every time.
Oh, thanks, Chuck.
Yeah, I have to agree with him. Steve, I know you and I talked about it after you filmed the special. I said, so how'd you like working with Cindy? And you were like, man, she was on it. That was crazy. when you're seeing somebody making that kind of connections and it's lining up with the knowledge you have, how does that affect you? Trying to keep that journalistic integrity, how do you not just be like, holy shit, how do you know all this?
There was definitely a few moments like that. And there were times where you could kind of sense it kind of all around us, you know, whether it be the producer or some of the camera people, you know, you'd kind of see that moment where they would kind of peek on the other side of it, just like, this is wild. Because, you know, not only was she on it in so many ways, but she would say, something is approaching us. I'm sensing something here. And then boom, all the meters that are in that part of the room or wherever we were would start to go off. Or she would say, I feel somebody's behind me. Turn around, point the SLS. 10 seconds later, boom, an anomaly on the same side. And this happened repeatedly.
Now I'm like all embarrassed.
No, you shouldn't be. Your gift is amazing.
I don't know.
It's amazing. It's great to watch it play out. But you had what we believe was Ed Gein's spirit come up on you at one point, perhaps even touch you. Mrs. Gein, Augusta Gein, seemed to be imposing herself on you. So I think that I like Into the Dark's concept. We now need a hashtag poor Cindy for these moments that are going on. Steve, Tracy wants to know, were you able to research Augusta's history to find out what brought in the demonic influence within her?
Well, you know, nothing that would, you know, I guess you could say would be tangible as far as a demonic influence, but she definitely had a lot of anger in her, a lot of rage towards people in general, but specifically women. So you kind of have to wonder, you know, what brought that upon? Was it, was there maybe some infidelity going on with her and her husband? What made her just have this disdain toward women in general, being a woman herself? It's very unusual.
And can I add to that? Because the mm-hmm. thing is, we were hearing demonic, we're hearing Satan, right? Things coming through. It's also important to remember that Augusta was very, very religious. So she might have thought everything is demonic, or everything we were doing for sure was demonic or evil, right? So there's that way to kind of view it as well.
When you look at the totality of this story, the trauma, the evil nature of everything that went on, and you see the video footage of Ed Gein after the fact. Obviously, he was put away for a long time and deemed mentally incapable to stand trial. When they felt that he had enough clarity, they did try him. He was found guilty of murdering just one of the women. Wasn't that right? They only got him on one account.
Well, I think he admitted to both. I mean, they found remains of both bodies at his house. So yeah, I think he was convicted of both ultimately.
That's unbelievable. But he looks so calm and kind of, he doesn't look psycho, right? When you're talking to the guy in the news clips, was that kind of disturbing to you, Steve, to see that again as a journalist? Some of the, you know, people have talked to Ted Bundy, John Wayne Gacy before they realized who he was and just how normal the guy really seemed.
Yeah, you know, definitely there's many sides of Gein. You know, you would hear that often. And I think that was kind of the demeanor that he portrayed most of the time. But, you know, then when you look at how he would be purposely deceitful in certain cases, and then sometimes he would be an open book. One thing that disturbed me quite a bit about Gein, you know, looking into the case, when Mary Hogan was missing. Of course, you know, it's a small town, so that story just didn't end right away. And oftentimes she would come up in conversation, you know, maybe at the local diner or whatever. And Gein would be there and he would say, I don't know why everyone's making such a big fuss. She's not, you know, Mary Hogan's not missing. She's hanging out at my place, you know, and they would kind of think like, oh, OK, you know, it's a weird sense of humor. But I wonder personally, was it a twisted sense of humor, kind of, you know, getting off on the fact that he's kind of saying this but can get away with it, or was he just matter-of-factly saying it in some kind of bizarre way, just stating a fact, right? You know,
right.
And Irish Bale says, was Ed Gein influenced by something dark to become so evil? Do you believe that he was influenced after death by something demonic or by the spirit of his broken and twisted mother?
Okay, so you're saying after his death, you're asking?
No, not after his death. You know, after his mother's death, what do you think influenced him? Was it his mother's spirit influencing him, or was there something more evil that took over Ed Gein?
I guess, you know, from my opinion, after all the research that, you know, that we've done, everything I've heard, everything I've seen, I have a couple of different thoughts on that. You know, one, we do think that something, how do I want to word that? We do think that there's something on the land itself, something that goes back, you know, far before the Geens ever inhabited that, that home. But at the same time, you know, you're looking at a very rejected, broken human being that had issues upon issues, suffered a lot of abuse. I personally think he had multiple personalities. And so that's a very difficult question. I could see, totally see the basis for either one of those, or even honestly, some of both.
Mm-hmm. Cindy, what's your take about that?
I mean, I agree with Steve, and I think it's very important that we're careful with how we answer this question in general, because mental illness is real. And if somebody's mentally ill, does not make them evil. So, I mean, I handle this very with kids' gloves, because that is not what we're trying to put out there. I think that's an important thing to say. And he really was abused as a child. It's like the perfect storm of having obviously a genetic predisposition to mental illness because of his mother, then growing up in an environment with an absent alcoholic father, and then a mother who created trauma, and then all of these things, right? It's like the, like we were saying, it's the soup, right? It's the giant pot of soup that makes the whole case. And we do, and I, with Steve, we do believe that there is something attached to the land that has been there for a very, very long time. So there's that aspect as well. But it's important to remember, right? If you're in a space where you're not like, look, I believe Ed would disassociate, right? There's some connection there to disassociating. And in that space of disassociation, it can leave an opening for other things to happen. So there's just so much going on. It's, I don't think that we can say it's definitely one thing. I think it's the soup. It's the whole pot of soup.
Wisteria Whisper asks, are any of you concerned that an entity or one of these malevolent energies might follow you home? Steve?
I think it's always a concern. With the Geen case particularly, I don't think so. I think Geen is very, he's there. You know, Plainfield is his territory. I think that I don't believe Geen's going to follow me, and I hopefully, and I don't think it's going to follow Cindy. I think that Geen's energy is going to continue in that space. But in general, yeah, it's always a concern and a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Cindy, what's your take on dealing with something that dark? Not only him, but his victims sometimes still be in the vicinity. Do they try to reach out to you afterwards looking for help?
I haven't experienced that in this case, honestly, you know, so I agree with Steve. That hasn't happened to me with this particular case. In other cases, have spirits followed me? Yes. But then again, it's kind of like spirits can be anywhere all at the same time and everywhere. So, you know, it's just I have not felt the energy of the Ed Geen case, you know, like spirit form since I've been off the case. Psychologically, it still impacts me a little bit.
Chris DeSano says, you had so many definitive responses at the farm. Yeah. Was there more responses or other activity that didn't make it to air?
Absolutely. Yeah, always. I mean, we, you know, Cindy and I were, we put in 12, 14, 16 hour days with these investigations, you know, like I'm sure you guys have always, you know, with all your investigations. And, you know, we were out there for a couple of weeks and you take all those hours and somebody has the unfortunate task of taking all of that and condensing it to the proper amount of time allotted.
Right.
You know? So, but yeah, we had a ton of responses.
Well, and folks, for those of you that watch Holzer Files or even Steve's show, and you're wanting more than the 52-minute episode that you get, this documentary, this Shock Doc, is about 90 minutes long, so it does extend and give you a much deeper look into a lot of this. Sarah Youssef asks, could the site become a draw for more negative activity through the laws of attraction? Cindy?
Oh, geez. Hey, look, I mean, sure, anything's possible. Thoughts are energy. I mean, you get enough people going to that land, putting that energy into the land or into the space. Sure, it can create more problems. You know, Energy is interesting, right? Like thoughts, all that stuff. In the accounts of people actually talking about a spirit that doesn't exist and creating a spirit, and then having the energy of all the thoughts actually produce evidence on electronic devices. I mean, that's telling. So be careful what you think, or be mindful. Be mindful of what you're putting out there, for sure.
Yeah, Monica Augustine says, this is why the property is kept by the locals and kept silent. I think they don't want to draw that negativity to that location. Steve, they want to know, Nisaba wants to know what the name of your show is and your YouTube programs that you're doing. Please inform listeners about that.
Sure. My series on Travel Channel is titled Haunting in the Heartland. And of course, now you can view it on Discovery Plus. And my documentary film series is called Haunted Saginaw. And all of those are available for streaming on Prime Video.
We do have a link up for that in today's program guide, so you can find it. David Wells, any plans to delve into John Wayne Gacy? Well, David, there are quite a few shock docs coming out. I will say that I filmed one earlier this year as well, not with John Wayne Gacy, but I did film one. I don't know. There is a new house.
Clowns are scary. Let me just say, wasn't that the clown guy?
Yeah. I grew up in Chicago when that broke, and that absolutely terrified me. Just the whole concept. It's just so horrifying, every aspect of it. Into the Dark says, how long does it take to film a documentary like Ed Gein, The Real Psycho, or Holzer Files? Holzer Files, we filmed for 5 days, roughly 12 to 14 hours a day, to get it pared down to the 50 minutes you watch on TV. For a 90-minute documentary, how long did it take you guys to film and get really deep into the subject?
Well, the investigation, when Cindy and I were out there actively investigating, I think that was around 7 to 8 days consecutively. But I was out there for about, I want to say about 10 days prior to that, kind of just getting some B-roll, conducting some interviews and doing a little bit of groundwork. And of course, months of, pre-pro as far as tracking down individuals, securing locations. So that was a lot of steps.
Tony Bruski says, is there ever going to be a way to calm the spirit of Ed Gein down and allow him to move on? Or do you think he's going to linger there forever?
I think
slow down, you two.
No, but I'm just, it's like my thoughts are like, well, that's up to him, right? Because there's this misconception that mediums can go and be like, I'm crossing you over, do as I say. And that's just not how it works. I mean, that's up to him. So yeah, I think he's staying.
Yeah, there's one thing that, Cindy kept hitting on while we were out there that, she sensed that Ed had some kind of unrest, that even though he is, basically buried right near his mother, he felt that he wasn't with her, that there was something wrong. So, and it does kind of make you wonder, because people were chipping away at his headstone. At one point, the whole stone was removed, stolen. It was recovered states away, brought back. And the story that we hear from a really reputable source out there in law enforcement, they had dug it up very deep and put the stone in the grave and then just poured cement in the whole thing. But then there was rumors that some people say they removed Gein from the cemetery at one point to an undisclosed location. I don't know that to be fact, but it's possible. And maybe that's what Cindy was picking up on, or some factor of that.
Well, before we go to Wayne Cox's easily to answer question, I do want to bring up one quick point that the 9 other bodies that were exhumed by Ed Gein, did they ever find out who those 9 people were?
From what I understand, some of them definitely, but some of them they could not identify. And it's always been rumored that there were more victims, because some
there
of the remains
definitely were more.
Yeah.
Wayne Cox asks a very important question that I think is so obvious to Steve Shippey and myself. Cindy Kaza, who's your favorite person to work with? I know the answer has got to be Jack Osborne.
Shane. It's Shane.
Shane. There you go. Hashtag lucky Shane.
I don't have a favorite. Everybody's like different, that. Right? That's Everybody right. brings something different to the table. I enjoy working with all different, mediums and investigators, and right, because we all bring something of our own to the table. So Yeah.
Jesse asks, hey, Dave, are you ever going to come to Owatonna, Minnesota and investigate? I'll join. I've tried a few times. They've got the orphanage and a few of the other places out there that are haunted. And whenever I tried to connect, they were interested, but they didn't have time at those moments. So I'm hopefully going to be able to get in and check some of these other locations. But I do like to go up to the Palmer House, and I'm hoping that when COVID settles down and everybody's got their shots, Cindy and Shane and I will do a fun little Holzer Files event at the Palmer House in Minnesota and get out and do a little investigating. Let's see. We've got a couple more questions. Dan Watson, can Ed Gein's spirit or his mother's be moved on from this plane of existence? I think you answered that. It's up to their spirit, right? Free will.
Right. Well, so here's the thing. The way I experience the spirit world, I can only speak based on my experience as a medium. Might not be one size fits all. That there are different layers on the other side. And then I'm going to say this. Time and space don't exist on the other side, so I'm now contradicting myself, but it's the only way I can explain it. So there are different layers on the other side, depending on the way you live your life here, what you have to work through, you're going to the layer you're going through. When people say earthbound spirits, my impression of an earthbound spirit is somebody who has passed away. They go to the fourth dimension, but it's so impressed upon the earthly dimension that they can't always tell, right, what's going on. They're so attached to earthly things. They have a really hard time moving. So as mediums, we can speak to them and encourage them or send them love or whatever we're going to do, but they ultimately have to make that decision on their own as a soul to progress to the next level or layer. So, you know, I mean, it's not as simple as a medium going in or a paranormal investigator going in and yelling at a spirit to go away. It's not that simple.
Right? Yeah. I don't even know how to read this name, so I'm just going to read the question. You got chased out of the cemetery. How often does that happen? I know some of the locations I've visited that we were just kind of going rogue, like Bachelor's Grove Cemetery in Illinois and a few other locations, they do frown upon you being there at night. Were you surprised to have the villagers arrive with their pitchforks and torches, Steve?
I wasn't too surprised. I mean, we definitely had full permission to be there. The people that take care of the cemetery were well aware that we were going to be there. But it was a pretty intense moment, you know, maybe a little more intense than what people were able to see.
Totally.
Yeah. And, you know, so, you know, we just wanted to kind of diffuse the situation, just let them know that we're here with good intentions. But at the same time, we can understand where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, if it meant that much to them that we not be there and it would just, I guess, make them feel that much better, we just took the high road and said, okay, you know what? That's fine. We understand. This is our point of view. This is why we are here. But we're going to go ahead and leave and, you know, take care. Beautiful town. Thank you so much. But, you know, things like that definitely happen throughout my years of investigating. We've had some pretty interesting encounters, you know, especially when you're investigating in the middle of the night, you know, and people are seeing flashlights, some, you know, in an old home, they call the police and say, hey, someone's breaking in that building over there. And then, you know, you're just kind of investigating, doing your thing. And next thing you know, you have seven police cars surrounding the building and you have to kind of say, well, here's who I am. This is what I'm doing. And yes, I have permission. Then they want to ghost hunt with us.
Cindy, from all the locations you've had a chance now to investigate on Portals to Hell and Ghost Brothers and Holzer Files and now with this documentary, does this Ed Gein location stand out as one of the most terrifying locations for you yet?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. This investigation was the most terrifying investigation I've ever done in my career. So yeah, it takes the prize for scariest investigation, right? Because it's just so many things were happening that I had never experienced before. And to hear all of the things coming out of the, excuse me for not knowing my equipment, the geoport, right? Like as a medium, it's like, how is this happening? I mean, I know it's happening. I'm right here as it's happening, but it's just so unbelievable. And I think the moment that all of it was scary, but the moment that really got me, and I know it came through that way on the documentary was when I was hearing a woman crying in my mind, the screams, and then it came through the geoport just loud and clear, like a wailing sound. It's just, it was terrifying. Yeah.
Steve, how does the Ed Gein investigation rank in your book of creepy haunts?
It's definitely at the top of the list for a lot of reasons. I mean, of course, you have the gravity of the case, Ed Gein, everything about the case. So that's already kind of in your mind and kind of creepy, soaking into your skin as you're walking on that land and everything you're doing. But the fact that we were getting all this activity, and I've never had audio communication like we received out there. I mean, it was nonstop to the point where the second we would turn on any ITC device whatsoever, Gein, Ed, Augusta, some vulgar things that didn't make it into the documentary. It was just shocking to me.
Before we head off, let us know, Steve, how can people find you? I've got the link right now, patreon.com/Steve Shippey. What other ways to find you, and what's next for you?
Sure. Of course, social media. You can just search my name on social media, and hauntedsaginaw.com, SAGINAW. And what's next for me? I'm getting ready to reopen one of my biggest cases as far as the Haunted Saginaw film series, and a couple of other things that we're trying to develop and just see where it goes.
And Cindy, you, what's going on? I know you teach. You have got a lot going on out there, and you're in the field. How can people reach out to you, and what's the best way for them to take your classes and keep up to date?
Yeah, so I do have a website, mediumcindykaza.com, but I will admit there's not a whole lot going on the website now because everything's closed for COVID. Normally I'm touring in my off time, but I'm not touring, but I am teaching a lot. I post all of my classes to my social media. You can find it at mediumcindykaza on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. So if you're interested in studying mediumship, I'm teaching a workshop for beginners, colors of the aura. I'm doing live Zoom events where I do readings where I bring through members of your family from the other side, friends and family. I do that a few times a month. So if you're interested in attending any of those things, you can go to my Facebook page, Cindy Kaza, Instagram, Cindy Kaza, and Twitter, Cindy Kaza, and you'll find all of that information on there when I post classes.
Excellent. And as always, you can listen to the best in paranormal talk radio every week on Darkness Radio. Just look at it wherever you listen to your podcasts. You'll find us there. And I made a mistake earlier when I said we'll be back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. We'll actually be starting an hour earlier because we have some East Coast guests who have day jobs and need to be up early the next morning. So we'll be starting next week at 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern, as we look into Holzer's Ghosts, Amityville. And we've got some great guests lined up. You are not going to want to miss that episode as well. Guys, I wish you a lot of luck with this documentary, The Shock Doc, Ed Gein, The Real Psycho, only on Discovery Plus. It was great catching up with you. Thank you guys for coming on.
Thanks, and sharing Steve. Some time.
Thank you.
Good to see you, Steve. Thanks, guys. See you next time.
All right, folks. Take care of yourselves. And remember to tune in next week for more of the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Darkness Radio.